So I'm a big Star Wars fan, and I mean, I've watched the movies, and I've been to Star Wars Land and Disney World, and I've even tried using the Force to remove the remote from the couch to make it closer so I don't have to get up and walk. But I don't consider myself a follower of Star Wars. And what I mean is that I don't really dress up like a Jedi when I go watch the new movie, or I don't plan on marrying my future wife dressed as Admiral Ackbar. But, however, the next day, the day when I chose this topic, I was waiting in a 45-minute line for the Millennial Falcon ride at Disney World, which is, it's kind of ironic, you know? It's like it was my destiny to have this topic, or maybe even the Force. But I also spent my days waking up before the sunrise, which I never do, to wait in that very long line right there to get in on the newest Star Wars ride. And to make matters worse, I also noticed that at Disney World, you could buy your own lightsaber from anywhere from about $100 to $300, which I thought was insane. But that's when I realized I'm just not as dedicated to the Star Wars franchise, and that I'm just a fan, and I am not a true Jedi or follower of this. So why did I take the time to tell you all of that? Because my topic is do or do not, there is no try, or being all in for Christ. If you've never seen the movie, then you probably don't understand what's going on. Well, in the scene, Luke Skywalker is struggling to learn the power of the Force and doubts his own ability, and Yoda tells him that he must forget what he thinks he knows about the power and the Force, and this is the scene. We can get it to work. So when I started thinking about this phrase, and thinking about this movie, I realized something very important. There actually is no trying. It just simply doesn't happen. You either do it or you don't. Think about it this way. You don't try new food. You either eat the food or you don't eat the food. You don't try to get homework done. You either get it done or you're a week late and asking the professor for more time because you never did it. You don't try to get to bed early. You either go to bed early or you're up to 5 a.m. And to really put it in extreme measures, you don't try skydiving. You don't jump out of a plane and think, no, never mind, I just want to get back in the plane. No, you skydive. There is no trying. You skydive, period. And I say all of this to say that you don't try to be a Christian. You either do it or you don't. And the thing that I want to focus on tonight is forgetting the lies that Satan tells you and quit trying to be a Christian. Just do it. So, why do we have this problem? And I believe that it's because a lot of us, we struggle with this ultimatum idea. You know, we have this thing called FOMO, which is the fear of missing out. And this is the concept that if we are committed to something, we miss out on something that is going on around us. Now, let's apply this to the Christian faith. When we make commitment to Christ, we have to turn down the lifestyle of the world. We are set apart and we are holy. We have to realize that we cannot live as the world lives. Have you ever convinced yourself that you don't have to give something up that clearly conflicts with your faith? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that a slight mess up here and there when you compromise your faith doesn't automatically make you a lukewarm Christian. But a continued pattern of behavior which reveals a lack of commitment to God, that makes you a lukewarm Christian. So, what does the Bible have to say about this commitment to Christ? It says more than that. So, Revelation 3, 15 through 16 says, I know your deeds, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish you were either one or the other. So, because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. And then 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 16 say, Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, comes from not the Father, but from the world. And then as James read for us, Titus 1:16 says, they claim to know God, but by their actions they deny him. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for doing anything good. Now you see, God does not want us to try. He wants you to give it your all, to put 110% into this. So what does that look like when you're trying to be a Christian versus when you are a Christian? Here are a few things that will show you if you are trying or if you are doing. I didn't realize you were not going to be able to read that, but I will read them off for you. So, first is a convenient Christian. And I say that because it's your Christmas Easter Christians, or the ones who you never know are a Christian until it's convenient for them to be a Christian. When the going gets tough, they slacken their faith and they fall away from God until the next spiritual high comes around, or whenever it's convenient for them to follow Christ again. The next is complacency, or it's being moved and not moving anywhere. These people go to these big conferences or to church camp or to retreats, and they are set ablaze for Christ. However, they never add wood to the fire, and it quickly burns out. In James, we read that we are to be doers of the word and not hearers only, and to show our faith by our works. Not to keep count of your deeds, but if you were to write out all the works for Christ that you have done since this semester has started, or since this year has started, how long would your list be? The next one I want to talk about, it hits closer to home for me, because this is a big one that I struggle with. And this is saying, my evangelism is living like Christ. But the reason that this one is up here on the trying side is because it's not just about how you act or conduct yourself from day to day, but it's about what you say too. It's one thing to talk the talk and not walk the walk, but it's also the same thing to walk the walk and not talk the talk. You have to both be living as a Christian and telling people why you are doing it. There are plenty of people that you're going to come into contact with in a day-to-day setting. And if you're nice, you know what they're going to think when you walk away? They're going to think, oh, that was a nice person. Because it's not, oh, I bet that person follows Christ. Because I don't know if the last time you checked media or not, but people no longer think Christians are the nicest people in America. You have to combine your godly example with your purpose. You need to let people know why you are doing what you do. Tell them about Jesus, because you are a witness. The next, you might not have done any of these, but this next one, I'm sure most of you struggle with. And that's your love for luxury. If I asked you to tell me who the richest disciple was, could you tell me? But now if I asked you to tell me who the richest preacher in America is today, I bet you start listing off Joel Osteen or Billy Graham or these other big name preachers. Now first, let me start off this by saying there's nothing wrong with wealth. Because in fact, money helps out quite a bit of people. However, when you begin to love it and use it only for yourself, now that is evil. Jesus and his disciples were not living off the American dream, getting rich and storing up for retirement. No, they were taking care of one another. They lived by the mentality of what is mine is yours. They saw that everyone was equal before God and everyone deserved to eat and to have the necessities of this life. But why is it so hard for us to put $20 into a beggar's hand without questioning their motives or judging their hearts or even glorifying ourselves? That is not our jobs. Our job is to do the works of the Lord and reflect His will. And to wrap everything up, what is not Christianity is to be satisfied with your faith and not trying to continually grow, setting your main focus on abstaining from sin and not setting your focus on doing the will of the Father, and to give God our leftovers and being too busy or forgetful for God in your faith. If you fall into any of those categories that I just mentioned, well, I hate to tell it, but you're not living a Christian life. So I got one last bone to pick. One thing that I want to point out is this unforgiving spirit that I notice a lot of people have. I have this too. This is something that I struggle with continually. But let's be honest. We know each other as a school, and word spreads as fast as wildfires. As Christians, what should our response be? If I know that you are involved in an act that is for a fact wrong, should I gossip about it to my friends, or should I come to you out of love and help you? The answer seems pretty obvious, right? But yet we seem to not grasp that concept and instead spread around the bad things about our brothers and sisters, what they're doing, and labeling them as sinners, as hypocrites, and as frauds, when in reality we are all struggling. So quit gossiping and start bearing one another's burdens. Imagine with me for a second that you walk into Starbucks one day and you order your favorite drink. For me, it's a nice cold brew with some cold foam. And they tell you, "Oh, I'm sorry, we don't serve coffee here anymore, but you can have a scone or even a cake pop." You're going to look at them very confused, like, "You don't serve coffee? How are you going to survive as a franchise?" If I was to ask you the mission of the church, some of you would probably tell me that to make disciples, and you were not wrong. But what if the church stops making disciples? We are told in Matthew 28:19-22, make disciples. Are you going to tell me that verse doesn't apply to you? Then why are you not doing it? If you take the total numbers of students at Freed, you get about over 2,000. Now, if every student at Freed focused on one soul in just 1 year, the church would see so much rapid growth. There would be 2,000 souls added to the church, and then the next year 4,000, and then the next year 6,000 in a matter of 3 years. If we were going to be all in for Jesus, we must be transformed. Now, if you were like me, you need the definition of transformed, so I put it up there. And that is to make a thorough or dramatic change in the form, appearance, or character of. Now, I'd love to take credit for this, but I can't. But Matt Cook said this in his lesson at Stantonville, and I just could not leave it out of this lesson. But to be transformed is the intentional and ongoing transformation process that occurs because of my relationship with Jesus Christ. Because of this relationship, my heart is transformed and my behavior follows. I find myself more routinely and easily acting, thinking, and speaking like Jesus. I'm going to wrap that all up. It's transformation into Christ-likeness. Now, I can speak for a long time on what true discipleship is and does, but however, the Bible already does that. It is the meat. I'm just up here bottle feeding you the milk, just like Paul did to the Corinthians. So if you really want to see what all a true disciple does, just go read about it. It's in the Bible. It's there for you. Because if you tell me you can't, are you telling me your homework and your textbooks are more important than the Bible? I find myself often doing homework way more ever than I study the Bible. Now, I'm not telling you it's how you verbally or mentally answer these questions, but it's about how you leave this place and how you conduct your lives and what decisions and how you live. Because I struggle with this too. This lesson and these questions, they're just as much for you as they are for me. But I'm not a big fan of just telling you how to start or telling you all these things and not giving you a starting point. Because I'm a guy, my brain works differently. When I see a problem, I just want to fix it. That's just how it is. But this is not really an easy fix. This takes time and discipline. And if you want to start, you have to stay with it once you start. Okay, so I've been reading this book here recently. And it's kind of ironic because it's Life Hacking Spiritual Disciplines. And it's about incorporating disciplines in your life. And I've been reading this book for over like 4 months. And it's only like 100 pages. So it's kind of ironic. But I found this concept in this book about the subconscious that is, one, amazing, and also terrifying. Our subconscious thoughts are the backbone to our conscious thoughts. What this means is that when we have a thought or an idea that pops into your head, that thought has been at work for hours, for days, for weeks, and even years. This is why you have these gut feelings about what you should do, and this also affects on how you act and how you think and how you live. So why am I giving you the psychology lesson? I tell you all of this because it's very similar to your digestive system. If you put good food in, you're going to get a healthy body and vice versa. Well, if you put godliness into your subconscious, then you'll get a healthy and a godly mindset and a mind. But if you fill it with explicit language, inappropriate jokes and movies, and worldly lifestyles, then that is what you're going to get out. So the first step you should take in all of this is to purify what you're putting into your heart, your soul, and your mind. The next step is to start implementing spiritual disciplines and to start what you claim to be. studies of people who are actively living out their discipleship have these common characteristics in them. All of those eight characteristics that you see, that's what these people are doing. Now, I don't want you to use this as a checklist, but rather a launch pad into starting your life as a disciple. And these are Bible engagement, obeying God and denying yourself, serving God and serving others, sharing Christ, exercising faith, seeking God, building relationships, and being unashamed for God. And the last step I want to leave you with is saying yes to opportunity. Christianity is the only thing that I can think of to where if you say yes to an opportunity that God gives you, you win no matter the outcome. If you say yes to sharing the gospel with somebody, you win even if they say no. Recently, I watched the movie Yes Man. And in the movie, the main character is constantly saying no to the people and all the opportunities around him. And it makes his life a wreck, and he is completely miserable. And it wasn't until he hit rock bottom that he realized that he needed to be doing more and saying yes to more opportunities placed in front of him. And then his life began to change magically. And he began to see how much happier he was than the people around him was. Now, I didn't give you just a rundown of the entire movie for no reason. I wanted to challenge you to have the same mentality in your spiritual life. When you see an opportunity to serve God, teach others, or show the love of Christ, say yes. That's all you have to do. What harm could possibly come from it? Gaining a brother in Christ? Oh, no, that's too much. That's terrible. Showing the love of Christ to somebody? Oh, that's horrifying. No. Even if people kill you, you go to heaven, and that's the best thing that we could ask for. You see, as long as Christ is our cause and love is our motivation, we can't lose, even if we die. Now let's get real for a second. You're about to leave this building, and you're about to go into a spiritual war zone, whether you are either going to be a soldier for Christ or you're not. There is no middle ground. The middle ground is called no man's land. If you get out of the light of Christ and you stray towards the middle ground, the enemy will shoot you down and take you as a slave. Christ has freed you from sin for you to be all in for him, to save others who are in the world, who are slaves to Satan and evil, so that they could also live this new, happy, godly life and one day rest with us in heaven. However, you have to pick a side. And I want to leave you with a few questions. And these questions are, would the people in your life say that it is clear that you are all in and a disciple for Christ? Are there areas of your life where you're scared to go all in for Christ? And is your impact clear? Now, if you have trouble answering these questions truthfully, then you need to reevaluate your lifestyle to whether you're all in or are you not in. Do or do not live for Christ, because there is no trying. Tonight, this lesson was for somebody in this auditorium. First, it was for me for writing this. I learned so much from this lesson. But it's also for somebody here who is listening. Someone tonight needed to hear this lesson and make the change in their life. Someone tonight is not in for Christ who needs to be. And if you are that person, if we can assist you in any way, we would love to as we sing our invitation song.